Before we begin, we want to take a moment to acknowledge the discrimination and crimes targeting Asian American and Pacific Islanders in the United States. It's been an extremely painful time in this country. The world of Atla and Legend of Korra are heavily influenced by Asian cultures, and we would be remiss if we didn't take a moment to acknowledge the pain, suffering, and fear that Asian American and Pacific Islanders are experiencing right now.
We stand in solidarity with the AAPI community because fear can take a real toll on the physical and mental well-being of people. We want to encourage our listeners, first of all, to be kind to one another, and then also to donate to the Asian Mental Health Collective if you can. You can go and learn more at asianmhc.org.
Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar: The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar. And although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end. And like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. A year ago, we embarked on a journey to podcast about Avatar: The Last Airbender. It was an incredible ride that you should check out if you haven't already.
Before we leap into Korra, we want to reflect on what happened following the finale of Atla, and what brought this world to its current moment when Korra becomes the Avatar. This week, we'll be discussing The Promise, the graphic novel series by Dark Horse Comics, written by Jean Luen Yang and Atla creators Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konitzko.
Kin Folklore, you know the drill. We're going to have adult content.
Not for kids.
If that sort of thing gives you the oogies, you know, like an unbearable amount of sweeties exchange and conversation between Katara and Aang, then like Sokka, you can go ahead and, you know, just jump out of here and hang with other lily livers. It's cool. It's fine. But if not, stick around. It's going to be a fun ride. So let's set the stage. Let's talk about what happened after the gang defeated Fire Lord Ozai, restored peace to the world, right?
Ended the 100-year war.
Exactly.
Let's not downplay what they did. There was a war for 100 years.
100 years. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about it that they did that in a summer. I know that we were complaining about being locked in our house, but shit, they did all that in a summer. It's crazy. So, you know, after all this is complete, Zuko is now the Fire Lord. Ozai, no more bending, is in prison. Azula has been institutionalized, and she's having some in the midst of a mental health crisis. Team Atla remains mostly the same, right? Except Katara and Aang are booed up now.
I'm sorry. Did I do that out loud?
Oh my gosh.
Zutara for life.
All the Zutara angst just came out. She couldn't even hold it in. Listen, you know how I feel about that. In the context of what we're talking about here in Korra, Those children that come out of this are just precious to me. The grandchildren are even more precious to me. All right? We wouldn't have no Tenzin. So we're going to just go ahead and just katang all day. You know what I mean? That's
whatever.
What it is.
I mean, you make a good point about the kids, but aside from that, ugh.
Yeah. But here's the real news. Toph is a metal bending teacher? Okay, we're going to get back to that. All right, we're going to definitely get back to that. So now that the reign of Ozai has ended, Team Avatar, including Zuko and King Kuei of the Earth Kingdom, decide that, you know, we need to get things back to a status quo, and they launch the Harmony Restoration Movement, which is basically a movement to end the Fire Nation's occupation in the Earth Kingdom and to bring about a time of peace and reconciliation. During a trip to Ba Sing Se, Zuko, who is very worried about the pain and suffering that his family has caused, he asks Aang to make a promise on the back of Appa, nonetheless, in the midst of a fireworks show. He's so down.
He's so moody. I just...
What?
Zuko has not changed at all. I mean, it hasn't been that long, but I'm just like, why are you in your feelings already?
There's growth. There's growth in this run, but I will agree. This guy is like so moody. Like it's wild. Like the only person that's less enthused about the fireworks is Toph, and Toph can't see them. Okay?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. So basically he says to Aang that he's worried about ever going bad, and he wants, if he ever turns like his father, for Aang to make a promise to end him. With some prompting from Katara, Aang agrees, right? Reluctantly agrees. A year passes, and assassins are attempting to kill Zuko in his bed. The assassin is a young woman named Kori, whose father is the mayor of a former Fire Nation colony called Yudao. Rather than imprisoning Kori, Zuko takes her home and has a tough conversation with her blended family. Kori's father, as it happens, is Fire Nation, but her mother is native to the Earth Kingdom. Making all of the Fire Nation citizens leave would be a way that would break up her family, and she's unhappy about it because obviously she has, you know, both nations are part of her, right? Even though she keeps out here, she keeps going about, I'm a Fire Nation citizen, but I'm an earthbender. It's
a little
extra.
I have a lot of thoughts on Kori. And when we get to the end of the summary, I would like to talk a little bit more about
We're definitely going to chop it up about Kori, for sure. So she doesn't want to break up the family, so she's, you know, trying to assassinate Zuko. There's been 5 attempts on Zuko's life since he's become the Fire Lord, okay? So this is not something, it's pretty wild that he's having this level of, like, he has security, he's not sleeping well. This has not been easy on our boy Zuko. So he does have a little bit of a reason to be down, to be fair to my guy.
Yeah, he does. This is a tough position he's in.
Definitely. Definitely. So Aang, Katara, and Sokka have been traveling the world attempting to do the work of the Harmony Restoration Project by bringing Fire Nation citizens home, but then they learn that Zuko, after learning about how these families would be torn apart, he's decided to abandon the project. They're not aware that that's why yet, but they just hear that he has now decided he's no longer going to participate in the Harmony Restoration Project. So they head to Yudao and reunite with Toph on the way. Toph kind of sees Appa and is like, yo, hold on, my students, I'm gonna pop out of here and go hang out with my homies. And it was pretty cool. She just hops on the back of Appa out of the blue, and they're like happy to see her. They give her a hug, and because of Zuko's actions, Aang is now conflicted. He doesn't know what to do. He meditates and speaks to Roku, who basically is Avatar Kaioshi. Like,
he's like, you gotta do what you gotta do, you know, if Zuko's acting up, like, take him out.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, on some, like, he says to Aang, a promise is a promise, you know? Like, you promised it, so he may need to, like, this may need to happen. So Aang says, calm down. Like, really, Roku, just calm down. I need to talk to Zuko first. Good on Aang. He needs to take a second, right? So outside of the city of Yudao, there is now a protest. And who's leading the protest?
Our girl Smeller Bee.
Yeah! Smeller Bee is back. All right. We dig her.
Longshot's cool. Back too, but you know, he doesn't say much.
Longshot speaks with action. He speaks through action. So they're leading this rebellion. They're you know, they want the Fire Nation out. They want the Fire Nation out of the Earth Nation, Earth Kingdom, and they're like, you know, Fire Nation out, let's go. When Aang, Katara, and Zuko meet in Yu Dao, it escalates quickly, and Aang enters the Avatar state. Talk about 0 to 100.
I know. Quick. I'm like, can you calm down? You're just mad. You're yes. going into the Avatar state. First of all, you only know how to go into the Avatar state because you went into it accidentally last time. We're not going to talk about that. But now you're with your friend who is your firebending master. Yeah, he's not right. But you're going yep. straight into the Avatar state?
I mean, Zuko's getting used to how to govern. He doesn't know. Proof of that will come later on. But he does know something. His instincts, in my opinion, lead him to say, something isn't right just to pull these families apart. We need to re-examine what we're doing here. But he doesn't communicate that to anybody and unilaterally announces that he's pulling out of the initiative versus talking to his allies, which is super wild. If you think about this and any sort of level of diplomacy, you wonder what the hell is Zuko thinking. So when they're able to talk and Katara calms Aang down out of the Avatar state, they're basically, Katara convinces Zuko that he needs to do what I just said. You need to speak to the Earth King and you need to have this and hash it out. So they decide that that's what they're going to do. And Smeller Bee is not down. She really is like, Aang, you know what? You're delaying us. Avatar Aang, I'm cool with what you're saying, but you got 4 days, bro. You got 4 days, actually 3 days. You got 3 days to figure this out, or we are storming the city and we're kicking the Fire Nation out of here. Rough. Smeller Bee, when does Smeller Bee, like, Smeller Bee just got a whole lot of bravado after she dropped Fuckboy Jet and became like a real revolutionary. Huh? Like, forget it. Oh, man. But anyway, Smeller Bee is not here for any sort of delays. Zuko returns home after deciding that he is going to meet with the Earth King. And there he meets Mei, who greets him and is upset because he didn't tell her that he was bouncing and going to Yu Dao. And they seem to have some communication issues happening. So there's a little drama between the two of them. And basically, you know, Mei is like, listen, these attempts on your life are concerning. You need to have protection. And she's brought the Kyoshi warriors to come and protect Zuko. And later that night, Zuko goes to visit his father.
Not a good look.
I don't know why. Why? Why go visit Ozai?
Part two begins with Team Avatar without Zuko heading to Ba Sing Se. Toph and Sokka leave early and head back to her school. Aang and Katara go to the city to speak to the Earth King.
After it, we must endure copious amounts of sweetie, oh sweetie, I miss you, sweetie. I love you, sweetie.
It is by far the most annoying part of the comics. I can't.
Oh my god. When Toph like says, really, sweetie? Does this happen a lot? Like when she like says, everybody's like, I mean, I feel Toph and Sokka on a deep level
yeah,
in this moment.
I've never related to Sokka more in this moment.
Oh, God.
So when Aang and Katara arrive, they encounter the members of Aang's official fan club. And there are a lot. Let's just be honest. The Ba Sing Se chapter of the Avatar fan club is real extra.
Yo, so, they have evolved since Kyoshi Island, right? Since the fan club in the beginning when he was still learning all the elements. Like, yo, his fans have evolved into like a whole other level, like you said.
It's a lot. It's basically a bunch of teenage girls who are obsessed and in love with Aang. And it's really fun times for Katara. Really fun
times.
No,
it's not. They sit her in the corner and she watches all these people drool over her man who's like, you know, forgets that she exists. And it's like, and the Western Air Temple is like, they say, well, we turned everything upside down so that it felt like, oh my God. I was like, yo, this is wild, 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 wild. And then the only issue I have with it, to be honest, one of the many issues I have with it, is that it kind of like Katara ends up feeling bad at the end because it's like, well, it made me and reminded me of home. Nah, bro, I just was stroking your ego. Get out of here with this. You get out of here with this and reminded me of home and my lost people. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, it's Katara. It's like the saddest panel is Katara sitting in the corner watching these girls drool all over her boyfriend.
Yeah.
In the Fire Nation, Zuko visits Ozai, who tells him a story in an effort to give him some advice. When Zuko was a child, they were vacationing on Ember Island. Zuko was only 3 years old, and he saw a turtle crab being attacked by a hawk. He rescued the crab as fast as he could, but then he realized that the hawk was hungry, and he was condemning the hawk to starve. Zuko stood on the beach debating which side he should take until a wave washed him away to sea, which forced his father to dive into the sea and rescue him. And I'm surprised his father did that much. But anyway, Zuko doesn't really understand the message of this story, and he leaves his father.
I take issue with this. I raise serious concerns about this. This guy, Zuko, has spent the better part of his life, and especially in the last 2 years or year and a half, hanging out with Iroh, okay? Who you need to be able to decipher his wisdom, the pie show tiles, the different sayings, the everything.
The you tea leaves, yes. Everything.
This simple ass story by Ozai, who's nowhere on the level of a philosopher of Iroh, was difficult for Zuko to decode. I take real issue with this. I don't believe it. This parable was not hard. He's basically saying, you don't know how to make up your mind, and you need the counsel and the safety of the real Fire Lord to come in and help you. Like, this is so simple. Like, this is what he's trying to do. He's setting him up, and I'm glad of what happens next.
So Zuko returns the next day and tells his father he believes that Aang is going to be able to bring about an agreement. But Ozai basically tells him he's weak. I'm surprised it took Ozai this long. And what he should have understood about the story was that the turtle crab and the hawk, you know, like the decision between them, whatever decision he makes is the right one. There's no right decision about who to save that is a Fire Lord. Any decision that he makes is the right one.
This is why he failed as Fire Lord. This is the exact reason why you are now.
This is real divine right of kings right here. Real big divine right energy.
Oh my God. I was sitting here listening to this guy and I was like, okay, this is why you're sitting in a cell with no bending and failed your mission. Cause that's the kind of thinking that got you there. That's wild.
As a leader, not a great look.
No.
When Aang and Katara are finally able to speak to the Earth King, they aren't very successful. He basically says he's going to enforce the Harmony Restoration Movement by sending his army to the colonies. Aang and Katara decide they have to head back to Yu Dao and evacuate the city before the Earth Kingdom army arrives. And, you know, back in the Fire Nation, things aren't going so good for our boy Zuko. Besides being dunked on from his father, his girlfriend is, like, pretty angry at him. And they have a big fight. It ends with Mei leaving and essentially breaking up with him. And then a really awkward moment with Suki. We will come back to this moment with
Suki. I feel like there's something happened there. She set up for Mei to find out. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm worried about you. The Kyoshi warriors are worried about you. I'm really worried about you. Yo, you helped him to break up with his girlfriend. And you're very worried about him. And the way that you said that was kind of, I don't know, man.
I was immediately upset by this. I was
you text me right away. We're like,
Sokka is out here with Toph trying to help her, you know, build her metal bending school and work through her issues that she's having. And Suki is essentially flirting with the Fire Lord. It's not a great look, Suki. And you know, I stand for Suki.
Yeah, after she told Mei what was going on. So Mei only is pissed at Zuko because of what she told him.
I mean, Mei is pissed at Zuko because Zuko is not being honest with Mei. Let's not put place the blame on the women here. But, you know, Suki, it's a little sus. It's a little sus.
I mean, I'm with you on the part about Zuko not being honest and his poor communication skills. But Mei, that is not new to her. He has been this for a minute. She's known this for a hot second. So my question is, like, why is it that Suki is dropping dimes out here unless she has an ulterior motive? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just feels, and it, I don't know. I don't know where this is going. I really, listen, for our listeners, we go through content, and as we're going through content, we don't always go through it at exactly the same time, or maybe we're listening and reading, but we do text each other real time when this stuff is happening. And I know for a fact that Andrea was, I didn't, when, because I'd already read, I told her I read it, wait till you get there. When you read this, you text me right away, like, yo, what up? What's up with this? Like, what is happening right now?
I was upset. I was upset. I'm still upset. This is, as I said, real sus. I'm going to give Suki the benefit of the doubt right now, but I'm keeping an eye on her.
Okay. Okay.
So this part basically ends with things are, as I said, things are not going well for Zuko, because as soon as he gets interrupted with this awkward moment with Suki, when one of his people comes in and tells him that the Earth Kingdom troops are on their way to Yudao.
Yeah, it's, oh man, it's, and then he says, just like my father, right? My father told me that this was going to happen. I had to show strength. And one thing that, you know, we'll talk about more in our next episode, but we should hit on in this, is one of the reasons Zuko is visiting Ozai is he really wants to find out more information also about his mother. He's mm-hmm. really pushing on that. Like, mm-hmm. like, and he's not getting what he wants. And in that, there's a lot on Zuko's mind. There's a lot on Aang's mind. Zuko is worried about, how do I leave my people? Maybe figuring out what happened to my mother will give me some insight into what was really wrong with the Fire Nation at that point, because I only have my father's side of the story and what we did. Aang is sitting, he's battling, and he's wrestling with a lot of things around whether he should fulfill the promise that he made and kill Zuko. And the thing is, he didn't even kill Ozai. So to raise to the level of killing Zuko would be far outside of Aang's character. And that night, once again, because we've seen this so many times, how parallel their lives are, they both dream the same dream. They both have the same experience in a dream. And they meet on a cliff as a battle rages below them. They're haunted by the decisions before them and the mistakes of the past. Roku, Ozai, and Zuko's mother Ursa appear in the dream. Aang and Katara reach Yudao, and at this point, they try to warn the locals about the coming battle. They're trying to let them know, hey, things ain't working out the way that we thought they were going to work out, but you're about to face an attack because we couldn't get the Earth King to agree to meeting with Zuko. So at that point, Corey and my boy Sneers, who has switched sides. He's out here like Podrick Payne, an undercover danger snack. We all need to know his secrets. What's going on? How did this happen? Everyone is so surprised that Sneers has an attractive girlfriend. Sneers is not
bad. I hated this so much. Okay. Why can't Sneers have a pretty girl? First of all, Corey is not perfect. And why can't Sneers have a pretty girlfriend? I hated the dunking on Sneers. I also hated that Sneers switched sides because of his boo.
Well, I mean, that's pretty believable. It can happen. It does happen. Like, Corey's a strong personality, and Sneers has never been a strong personality. He's always been more of a follower. That's why he ended up with Jet until they went to Ba Sing Se. He was with Jet and the whole crew, and then he decided when they left and went to Ba Sing Se, he was going to go home. But he's never been very strong, a very strong personality, and Smellerby knew that. Sneers does have some character defects here, where he can't pick a side. He can't decide what he's going to do and stick to it. He was a freedom fighter. Then he's not. He was like, you know, he really does have to figure it out. But, I mean, if I had to pick between hanging out with Smellerby or my girlfriend, I'd probably go with my girlfriend, too.
I mean, that's fair. But he, you know what? I don't want to get too much into
the man has needs. He has needs. Okay. Smellerby is not going to fulfill those needs. Okay. That's it. That's what it, has, what it comes down to.
Man, Corey.
There's a lot, that little scene between the two of them. There's like a scene where the two of them meet up and she tells him, she's like, well, you can't pick. He's like, I'm not going to choose sides. He's like, well, you're going to choose sides about whether you want to be with me or whether you want Smellerby. And he chose.
Fair. Okay. All right. Fair. I'm going to back off of Sneers.
The resistance is trying to convince Aang that he should just join their cause. When the Udao fan club arrives, similar, because they got a message from the Ba Sing Se fan club, these girls are a bit more serious than the Ba Sing Se club. Because they've not only become like fans, they've taken on the dress and the ceremonial tattoos of the Air Nomads, and they have arrow tattoos on their head, and this enrages Aang. He is not good. Like, he's like, yo, you're making a mockery of my people. How are you out here in costumes? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Katara's even like trying to chill him out again. Like, listen, Aang's a lot more aggro in this comic.
I mean, don't we all get upset when our culture is appropriated?
100%. I do. Yeah, I'm with you. I gotta stand with Aang on this one. I really do. I really do feel him on this one. And he feels like he's being disrespected. So he walks off and Katara finds him and he's meditating on the roof of the city's front gate. And Aang tells Katara that he has figured out of like what he's seen here, why the four nations have to remain separate. The power imbalance means that the stronger nation will always hurt the weaker one. Katara reminds Aang that Guru Patek told him that separation is an illusion and that the four nations are really all the same. But Aang is not trying to hear it. He's unconvinced. He has to restore the separation of the nations to prevent the corruption that he sees, even if it means going against his Air Nomad principles and killing his friend Zuko. Man, rough.
Heavy, yeah.
Super rough. All of Team Avatar ends up in Udao in advance of the two armies. Sokka, Toph, and Suki stop the battle's progression in a hilarious fashion. Oh my gosh.
Like, in a way, they can only those three could do it. I mean, yeah. It was like the old gang was back together from the finale of Atla.
It was really great. They even like nod to it when they're like, hey, how are we gonna take out a whole army? And then, you know, they're like, well, we took out a whole bunch of airships, and it's like, yep, we certainly did. So it's really cool. It's really cool to see them like back together doing their thing. And you know, Aang goes into a rage
once again
and confronts Zuko once again, but Katara calms him down and she explains to him that she no longer agrees with the Harmony Restoration Movement, because when she looks at Korra's family, when she sees all the people together in a family from different nations, she begins to see their future and the potential of their blended family. And what would it mean if all the nations were completely separate for them? Like, how would that affect them? And she says to him, go and meditate. If you go and meditate and that's the answer that you come to, that you have to kill Zuko, then I'll accept it. But you also could go there and think of a different way, that there may be a different way, and she'll trust whatever he comes back with. Aang goes, he meditates, gets in the rocks, no Ozai this time, pounding down with heat while he's sitting in there. But he does meet another Fire Nation person. His previous life meets up with Roku. Roku tells Aang that he not only thinks that he should kill Zuko, but by the way, I'm also his great-grandfather.
It's rough. I was like, wait. So, okay, first of all, I didn't realize that Aang didn't already know this. I think I was surprised by this because Aang is quite surprised. But he's like, yeah, like, Zuko's my great-grandson, but you know, you got to take him out.
And Aang is mortified. He's like, how could you tell me to do this, Roku? Like, I don't agree. Like, when you're saying that you're going to kill your great-grandson, like, how would you even think to do this? Like, and he's having this conversation with his past life. And I was also surprised that he didn't know. I actually, after reading the comic, went back through the episodes and was like, well, man, how could he not know this? Like, we knew this so far on, but we know, even though Aang never really gets that information, which is pretty profound, at least from my remembrance, what I went through, I didn't see that he got that information. So, Aang disagrees. He says that he doesn't want to kill Zuko, and he comes out, a beam comes out of where he's meditating, and everyone in the middle of the battle can see it. At that point, Aang heads back to Yu Dao and stops the battle by separating the earth. Real Kaioshi energy
style.
There.
Yeah, real Kaioshi energy. At least he doesn't big. Let Zuko end like Chang the Great.
No, but almost. By the hair on his chin, like chitty chin chin. That was it. It was almost over. And as he's separating the earth, Zuko starts to fall into the earth accidentally. Aang goes down to catch him so that he doesn't die, and explaining that they will have to find a path forward for the new world when they get back to safety. A few days later, Aang tells Roku that they need a break. Basically, I don't want to talk to you, and I don't want to come here and meditate and talk to you anymore. You're out here. How could you think about killing your great grandson? He says to him, you know, you asked me to think about the world, you know, and make sure I would think about the world, how it would be the most safe. And when I thought about the world and how it could be, the people I saw closest to me were my friends and my family, and that included Zuko. And he's like not really sure that he can depend on the lessons of the past to forge a new future. That if he's going to forge a new future, he may need to like say, you know what, I'm not talking to Roku for a while. And he breaks up the beads and the necklace and all the things there that would help him communicate with his past lives. And he also makes up with Zuko, who once again has been incapacitated by the conflict within.
Every time Zuko has a major conflict, he gets sick.
He does. He does.
It really affects his body. I understand that. I get it. But I'm just like, again?
Yeah.
With Iroh taking care of him?
Iroh was throwing him a little shade, too. Like, why you only come here when you're feeling like this? Like, you should be here more often. And then he gives them some terrible tea that they spit out. And Zuko decides that he needs to reconnect with his family and figure out what happened to his mother. In the conversation with Aang, Aang says something that really was impactful to me. He talks about the fact that because Roku is my past life and you're Roku's great-grandson, then essentially we're family. And that was really strong. I felt that. I was like, wow, that's that moment where he kind of acknowledges our connection is deeper than I even knew until now. And now I understand why there's a certain connection and why. Oh, I mean, it took me back to him sitting saying, do you think that we could have been friends? And then everything that happens in their whole journey throughout, you know, the first three seasons of Atla, all the way through Zuko's redemption arc. And there's so many moments where you just see clearly the connection spiritually between Zuko and Aang. And it was really cool in that conversation to hear him say that. He goes to Azula, Zuko, and says, I'm going to need your help. We're going to go find our mother. And Aang meets with his fans and gives them permission to continue practicing the culture because he realizes that without people, all of the culture that he has in him when he dies will die with him. So he needs to pass on the Air Nomad culture, and he names them the Air Acolytes, similar to Pema in Legend of Korra.
She's one of my favorites. I really love Pema.
Yeah, she's
so great.
So what does this have to do with Legend of Korra? What do you think, Andrea?
I mean, I think that it's really important to have an understanding of what happens after you win the big battle, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times in fantasy, there's this big bad, and once the big bad is defeated, we kind of assume everything's perfect. And what I really loved about this was it shows everything's not perfect. Mm-hmm. And it provides us some background on some of the conflicts that come up in Korra. I mean, when we meet Korra, she's traveling to Republic City, mm-hmm. which is a multicultural society. Mm-hmm. You have people from all four nations, benders, non-benders, which is a big conflict within Korra. And if you haven't read the comics, it's kind of confusing about how this would have happened, right? We don't know. All of the nations still exist on their own, right? There's still two water tribes. There's still air temples. There's the Earth Kingdom and the Fire Nation. But in Republic City, people are living in blended families and communities. And that in itself creates its own culture. Republic City is different from the rest of the world.
100%. 100%.
So I think it's interesting to kind of think about, like, what happens when a war ends, especially a 100-year war. We're talking a multi-generational war.
100%. And the effects of imperialism, right? It's this, like, you know, the Earth Kingdom and the Fire Nation colonies created something totally different from what existed before, when there were just a clean line between the four nations. And I really love that, you know, although you could look at it, I mean, obviously everything the Fire Nation did in invading and bringing war to these other nations was terrible. After it, they've been defeated, and you put a new Fire Lord on the throne, and there's all these different parts of what's going to happen. What's interesting to me is that in that peacetime, that there's actually some really unintended consequences of peace that actually you have to contend with. And you're right. Like, in, like, you know, when we saw Game of Thrones end, we all wonder, well, man, how does this, you know, work out in 20 years, you know, with Bran being king and, you know, Tyrion being Hand and all this. And how does what happens when you get to the end of Lord of the Rings? What happens? You know, George R. R. Martin has spoken about that a lot as well. Right. So there's a lot of times of fantasy where, like you said, it ends. You don't know how people governed. What did they decide? How did they fix the bigger problems that came out of all the bad stuff that went on? And this is something I think is really powerful about the comics, that if you just end with the last episode of Avatar, and then you go to Korra, for me, doing that first before I said, oh, wait, I got to go back and read the comics, it was kind of like, well, how did it become so modern? Mm-hmm. What happened here? Why is everybody living together? I had so many questions. And this is why we're taking the time to go through these comics, because there's so much here. There's so much rich history about how things evolved to get us to where Korra becomes the Avatar and what she has to contend with in these four seasons.
Right. And so the larger issues about what happens when you defeat the big bad, also kind of, you have to question, like, well, Ozai wasn't completely alone, right? That people, he had collaborators and people who helped him. And what do you do about the pain that the Fire Nation has caused? Like, this is a question that still plagues, you know, our world. Yep. What do you do when the imperialism ends and you decolonize to some extent, because we know it's never truly over? Mm-hmm. What do you do about the pain and suffering that the people who were hurt experienced? You can't just go on and say, all right, well, it's all good now, the war's over. There has to be some kind of reconciliation. And so I think that this comic is really asking larger questions about what do you do post-imperialism?
I agree. I totally agree. And I think it's interesting to see that this symbol, the Avatar, who's supposed to be all about bringing balance, is really struggling to understand what that means as well, right? Like, he's full force. Like, harmony means separating everything and putting it back the way that it was. And he can't wrap his mind around it right away, that you can't just, you know, you can't put things back in the bottle like that. This it's out. Like, there's no way to, like, just, like, put it back in. And you're going to have to figure out how to go from where you are right now. And it takes him a while. I mean, his blind spots about even, like, thinking about, well, man, I'm, like, in a relationship with somebody from the Southern Water Tribe. I've spent most of my time with my friend group. The people who are my closest friends are all from different nations, right? Like, they're not, I don't have another air nomad. I mean, obviously they got wiped out, but even thinking about that, right? So it's really interesting. And what I love most about this is, you know, we often talk about, you think about, like, again, Thrones, and we talk about the small folk. And these comics really put the struggle of the people, like, people, we often put our focus on, like, the big characters or the major and the little minor characters, like, that are still, like, main characters, but they're, you know, the cabbage guy, the Suki, all these other characters that you get along the way that you're like, okay, they're not, like, the main four or five, but they're, like, they're in the mix. But what we don't often think about is that while that's all going on, just like us, people are just living their life. They're not making these big decisions. You know, we see that some with the episode where the family's trying to just get to Ba Sing Se because they're worried about, you know, they need a safe harbor from the war. But now we really see it deeper, that people were building families and living their life and building businesses and trying to just make it through what were the conditions they were in. You know, some people had better fortunes than others. And I think like that is really powerful to see how it not only affected the main characters, but society. That's really powerful to me in these comics.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the representations of regular people in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my problem with Corey, and this will come back to our larger, you and I don't agree about Zuko and Aang here.
Yeah.
Like,
true.
I think that they're both wrong. I think mm-hmm. that Zuko is as wrong as Aang. And the comic kind of ends with Zuko being right. And I have an issue with this. And my issue with it is solely based on Corey's standing in the world. So Zuko is almost killed by Corey, takes Corey back, speaks with her extremely privileged, powerful father, who is in a position of power to the other people in Yudao, and decides that because of the opinions of these people who have lived in a relatively privileged point of view, that he can just end the Harmony Restoration project movement. That's a problem. Like, Corey is out here leading a rebellion because she thinks that this is wrong based on her position in the world. She doesn't seem to hold much weight for the Smellerby's argument, which is that the Fire Nation has literally killed our families,
mm-hmm.
has created so much pain in our lives. This is why we're part of the rebellion to begin with. They need to go. They've created so much hurt. And I really took issue with the fact that this was the air that Zuko heard, and that his default position was, I need to be strong for my people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Zuko ending the Harmony Restoration Movement perhaps isn't necessarily the wrong opinion, but how he got there is the wrong choice, I mean. But how he got there is troubling to me, because there, all of these folks, you have Kuei, Zuko, and Aang making a decision together. Three people in very powerful positions without consulting the citizens of any of the four nations that will be impacted. And that's the problem. The problem is that the little people, the small people, as they would be called in Game of Thrones, but the citizens of the four nations are not in any way consulted. They just sort of decide the best way to move forward is to end the colonies, which is not wrong, but they never really talk about how they're going to end the colonies. Like, you cannot just tear people apart who've been living together for generations and whose culture has been impacted by the colonization. And so Corey's character kind of bothers me in a lot of ways, because she's this like revolutionary, but she is coming from like a position that's really different from the everyday people who live in Yudao.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd agree with that portion of Corey. I think where I get with Zuko and where we differ is that what I liked about Zuko's position, which, you know, is a lot, because I think he's like still like, you know, there's all those things that he held on to all those years of his honor, you know? So I think that he's found his honor by pausing. The problem that I thought that you're hitting on, which I agree with, is that three people made this decision. A king in one place, a king or fire lord in another place, and the Avatar, who's supposed to bring balance. And these three people didn't think, well, man, you know who's not sitting at this table right now? Anybody from either the Northern or the Southern Water Tribe. anybody from, you know, any of the citizens. There was a lot missing. So I agree with that. I think what we're going to find throughout this run of talking about the comics is that governing is a big part of this. Like, how are you going to govern this new world, and how are you going to think about what to do? But what I liked about Zuko's stance was that he paused it. Should he have, again, reached out to his allies, talked to them and said, hey, I see a problem development here. When we agreed to this, we didn't think about this, this, and this. Sure. Could he have talked? I made the assumption, and maybe it's not clear, and it is not implicit in the comics, so I do defer to you on that. I made the assumption when he gives Aang and Katara the tour of the city that he had spent some time in Yudao, and so he had gotten to see some other people other than Corey's family alone. And through that, he made the decision. So I kind of made the jump in my mind, because I felt like it was inferred, that Zuko had spent time in Yudao and saw that what they were deciding to do was wrong. Where I take issue with Zuko is when you go into an agreement with allies, especially when you were the force that was the imperialist force, you have to be clear in your intentions up front before you make unilateral announcements in your nation about what you're going to do, and then stop people from coming back and stop people from leaving. That was a show of force that was reminiscent of Ozai. And I think part of that is because he's still mixed up about what parts of what his father did were good for the Fire Nation and what parts weren't. And I think that's why you see this whole thread of him saying, I need to find my mother, because he knows that there's a piece of the puzzle that he doesn't quite have yet. And so I think some of his decision-making is flawed, but I do like that he paused. Where Aang was straight ahead, let's go, and the Earth King was like, I can't look like a sucker again. And Corey was like, what is it going to do to my family? And Smellerby was like, hey, I'm pissed off because look what they did to us. I do like the fact that Zuko took a moment to pause and say, this is not right. I just don't like the way he executed it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Zuko's instincts are not wrong. It's just the way what you said earlier is right. He doesn't know how to govern yet. He mm-hmm. has to learn. And when you really sit back and reflect on the fact that teenagers are legit running the world, It's tough. Like, these kids are not really prepared for what it means to govern. Winning a fight, you know, saving people, that's part of who they are. It's at this point, it's in their DNA. But what it means to listen to multiple constituencies, to negotiate, they never really had that much experience with that.
I agree. Because that's what I meant when I said Aang was struggling with this, because they were kind of in, there's a big bad, there's one person, there's one thing, I have a singular mission. Since he came out the iceberg, there was nothing else on their mind but how do I stop this terribleness that the Fire Lord and the Fire Nation is doing? And now it's more nuanced than that. There isn't, like, you know, the things that they're fighting against are not so much people as they're fighting against, like, you know, circumstances. And and that is a real kind of thing around how do you create policy. And there's a power vacuum that has been, you know, we see this a lot when countries go in and invade other countries, and then they're like either put out or they leave or their forces pull out. Or even if you've seen it where we've gone in the United States and like maybe gone to try to say we're protecting another country, but then we pull our forces out and now there's a power vacuum. Even if we put another regime there, there's a whole thing where like you're trying to figure out what's going to happen. And so you have not only here in Yudao, but we're going to find throughout the rest of the four nations that there is real conversations being about what does it mean to let go of the past and move towards the future, which is what lands us at Korra in this modern society. But it's going to take some real growing pains. And there's people who obviously, like in every society, in every culture, are going to take advantage of that. And I think there are some instances here where we're going to see more and more and more that Team Avatar is going to have to decipher between people's intentions more than like they're just all bad or all good. What is the potential outcome of their actions?
Yeah, I think that the way I come down with Corey and Spellerby is they can both be right. I think Corey is right. You can't just rip families apart. You can't just pretend that none of this happened. But I think Smellerby's point about the legacy of the Fire Nation is a really fair one, too.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that the comic doesn't necessarily ask us to agree or disagree with either one, Corey gets essentially what she wants, but maybe not the way that she wants it. I think these are really important things for people to consider. I think that we don't always think about what happens after the war ends. I mean, and we're still in our own world, we're still dealing with the consequences of, you know, multiple conflicts that cross borders. And, you know, I think that's the human struggle we will be for many years.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think that's going to lead to, you know, when we cover next The Search, one of the things I think that's really powerful is making peace with your past to have a healthier present and a more productive future. And I think that there's a part of Zuko that can't complete his whole process in this redemption arc until he understands a major piece that's missing. And a major piece that's been missing, if you're a fan of Avatar, that we've all been wondering, well, what happened to Ursa? And that's coming. We're going to talk about that next episode. But I think that that's how you honor your lineage while still making progress towards a future that's healthy and productive and feels integrated into what's happening in the current moment, is a big part of what Zuko is struggling with, because he's very fearful. He doesn't, as Aang said, you don't give yourself enough credit, Zuko. Like, you made me promise to do something that I don't think I'm gonna need to act on, because you've gotten through the hardest parts, essentially. And Zuko's still learning that. He's still learning that he can trust himself. He's learned a lot from Iroh. He's learned a lot from his experiences. He doesn't need Ozai's advice on this. He wasn't being indecisive, in my opinion, in that moment, in every moment. I think he was appropriately pausing. And I think sometimes in society, we take patience as a sign of weakness. And I think Ozai, that would be his take. But I thought that he was looking at it more patiently, and that the places where he was flawed was because he's still flawed and needing healing inside of himself to be able to govern more properly.
I totally agree. I just feel like Zuko continues to not ask for help when he needs it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real problem with him. And I think that May's issues with him are entirely understandable, mm-hmm. without even knowing about Suki's sus behavior. but he has Iroh still. Iroh is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
He does say that he doesn't want to bother him because he promised him essentially a retirement. But when he's in this conflict, he could go to Iroh. He could speak to other people. He takes so much on himself, and it's tough. Like, it's one of the reasons that conflict seems to eat him up. He never really asks for help when he needs it.
Well, yeah, and like, he talks to Iroh's picture rather than going just hitting him up. Like, he's like in there, like, straight talking to a picture, and you're like, why don't you just go see the guy, you know? But you know, Zuko will learn. And I think, you know, we find in Korra that he does learn a whole lot. There's a lot that he does between when we see him as an older man in Korra, you know, to where we're seeing him now. And, you know, it is hands down. Zuko's story is hands down one of the reasons why you don't give up on people. Aang's love of him and how he treated the situation, even though it was tough in moments, his redemption arc is one of the single greatest redemption arcs that I've ever seen in anything. And it continues to not disappoint throughout the comics and even when you see him in Korra. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is only the first graphic novel series, and so we're not quite at the beginning of Korra yet. You know, we're not quite at the founding of Republic City, but you can certainly see the conflicts and the struggles that would lead us down that path. And you can also see where those conflicts have not been, will not be able to solve. You're never, in policymaking, in border drawing, you're never going to be able to make every group happy. There's always going to be that power dynamic at play and who has a seat at the table and who has the loudest voice. And I think you're beginning to see that here, that, you know, Smellerby's new freedom fighters have a point. Their approach may not be one that everyone can get behind, but they have a point about what's happened in the past, and that Corey and her rebels also have a point. And so how I'm interested in seeing how we can kind of reconcile all of these differing points of views. And we've also, this is Earth Kingdom and Fire Nation, folks. We haven't even gotten to the water tribes. Mm-hmm. And we know that they're very different in culture. So I'm interested in seeing where the comics go in terms of, you know, the period of healing and reconciliation, which I'll be honest with you, these comics have done a lot more to advance reconciliation between warring parties than actually ever happens in our history. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's not entirely true, right? There are many places where reconciliation has been a very a purposeful, pointed, discussed thing that where everyone is trying to at least appease everyone so that there another fight doesn't break out. But it's not always successful, and the right people aren't always at the table. And the real burden of any kind of leader of a nation, or in Aang's place, he's not even a leader of a nation, right? He's sort of this outlier who is a leader to the people, but he doesn't have allegiance to any of the four nations in the same way. One of the burdens is making sure that you're hearing your people and you're doing not necessarily what the people say is right, but what is actually right for the people. And so I think that Zuko was thinking about what was right for the people, but so was Aang. And so I think it's really interesting to think about these things as we go forward.
I agree. And I think they have to start, you know, one of the things that I think that the journey will be interesting to see is how much they open it up beyond their little group, right? Like beyond the current heads of state and, you know, and Team Avatar, how much do they open up to other perspectives and other points of view in the governing process, in the policy making process, and that does play out. And again, it gets us, you know, really, really close. There's still like lots of room for the creators to fill in some gaps with new content. And, you know, Avatar Studios was just announced, so I'm sure we're going to get some of that. But it does take us really close up to what we see when we first meet Korra in the Southern Water Tribe and when she first gets to Republic City. And so I'm here for it, and I hope you guys are excited as we are to be back in here talking about the world of Avatar leading up to, like, getting to Republic City, filling in the gaps, and getting us from the last episode of Avatar to the first episode of Korra, and then getting through all of Korra. We are excited for this journey.
Yeah, I'm really excited because I love Republic City, so I can't wait to see how we get there.
Yeah, for sure. But that's going to do it for us. Please go check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're going to have some content there. And yeah, hit us up on our email if you got anything at kinfolklore@gmail.com. If you guys got suggestions. And we will see you back here to talk about The Search next week.
Bye, everyone.